It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytss and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Talk Heathen. Talk Heathen is a Sunday show. Today's date is June 26th, 2022, and I am your host, Objectively Dan. Joining me today is another great host. It is MD Aware. MD Aware, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a Truth Wanted Takeover today.
It's a Truth Wanted Takeover today. Absolutely. Now, MD, you have been on Talk Heathen before, but you're mostly found around my neck of the woods, down at the old Truth Wanted station. I don't know what we call that, but that's where our typical hangout is. But today we're both hosting Talk Heathen today. So in case you're new to the show, Talk Heathen is a live call-in show. We have open lines, so you can get your calls in at 512-991-9242 or from your computer at tiny.cc/callth. Now, MD, for you know, you should introduce yourself, I think, a little bit, since it's been a minute since you've been on. You're a real MD. That's not just an internet cosplay. You're an MD.
This is true. And yes,
I'm glad that we're talking about this today, because there was a question I've been meaning to ask you. I don't know if you have ever heard of this condition. Have you ever diagnosed anybody for LIGMA?
I'm sorry, what?
Have you ever diagnosed anybody for LIGMA?
No, I don't know what that is. Is this a setup?
You don't know what LIGMA?
No.
Okay, well, I'll let the chat finish the rest there. Excellent. But you know, I'll leave it at that. But anyway, I'm glad that we get to talk to you today.
You're gonna
look at that later and you're gonna laugh. So anyway, this is Talk Heathen. It is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of religion and government. There are a couple different ways to support Talk Heathen and the ACA. You can support us on Patreon, and that's tiny.cc/PatreonTH. And you can press the like button on the video to subscribe to the channel and enable notifications. And you can comment below and talk about your favorite caller. I know you guys are going to say me, but I think you guys should give some love to MD Aware today as well. It helps his ego. You know, he really needs that in order to be on these shows. And he'll never admit it, but you know, we both know it's true. So please just help him out there. And to become a channel member, that's another way to support the show. You can click the join button below the video and you'll get a custom chat emotes with that. And you'll be able to help perpetuate the mission of Talk Heathen and the Atheist Community of Austin. And also below the live chat, we have a fundraiser. 100% of the proceeds go directly to the ACA. YouTube does not take a cut of any of that. So those are all different ways you can support the ACA and Talk Heathen if you want to do that. So please go ahead and do that. I'm giving MD a hard time, but I'm actually really glad MD is here today, because a lot of things have happened in this United States of ours. MD is not in the United States, but he has a background that I think helps contribute to this conversation. There are a couple of different topics that I really wanted to talk about, but one in particular that has come up recently. We talked a lot about it on Truth Wanted on Friday, but of course, the Supreme Court has decided to take away the rights of people with uteruses everywhere in their ability to have abortions. Specifically, what that means is they have stopped it as a right on a national level. It is now up to states' rights to determine whether or not abortion is going to be legal within the individual states. There's already trigger laws that have been in place to outlaw abortion in particular areas, including here in Texas. So 25 million people are going to be without the right to have abortion within the state. Oklahoma is already banned, I believe. Arkansas is already banned, I believe. Louisiana, I think, is on its way. So not a lot of great options, especially if you live in places like East Texas or somewhere. Somebody might think, well, why don't you just go out of state? That's like a whole day's drive to get to places like New Mexico and other places where it might be legal. It may not be legal in the next couple months. But on top of that, it also means that you have to get an appointment with these places. And we're going to be overwhelming our medical system by having these places have more appointments than they can handle from people that are out of state, which means, and of course, this being a time-sensitive issue, that some people may not be able to get those procedures done in time. So it's a pretty fucked situation, MD. It's a pretty fucked situation. And some of you guys might be wondering, why are we talking about this? You know, aren't we supposed to be a show that talks about religion and other stuff? Well, because there has been a push in this country for about 50 years since Roe v. Wade, which is the landmark case that was overturned for this, a push has been to basically turn that around and say that this shouldn't be legal, that we're actually harming, you know, little babies in doing this, that there's a ultimately religious argument that's being made, that for some people, even just the act of conception means that you're bringing a soul into this universe, and that by committing an act of abortion means that you are, I don't know, hurting that soul, I guess. It's wrong. It's not something that we believe, and something that the ACA does not support as well. If you go to the ACA's webpage, you'll see that we've had a very clear stance about being pro-choice for a really long time. And so it's an issue that matters to us. And so it's something that we will talk about, and something that we will defend as far as having women's rights and people with uteruses' rights to make that decision for themselves. So it's pretty heavy. And we understand that a lot of you guys are angry. A lot of you guys are upset. And a lot of you guys are probably wondering, well, what can we do about this? And unfortunately, right at this time, there's not a lot we can do. It seems that as time goes on, you know, there may be other options presented, but in this country, the Supreme Court is selected by the president, and it's a lifetime appointment. Clarence Thomas, the person who wrote this opinion, or his lead writer in the opinion for this case, has been on the court for over 30 years, which I want to point out is longer than some dictators have ever been in office, but that's neither here nor there. So there's really not a whole lot we can do. It has to happen at a state level. We'll see what happens in other places, but right now, at least in my state of Texas, doesn't seem like things are going to change. Of course, we want to get to your calls and talk to you guys about this and other issues. But before we do that, I mean, MD, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's really troubling to me. And even though I'm not an American and I don't live or work in the States, I always considered it sort of an option, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're, you know, frankly, the U.S. is 10 times bigger in terms of population and opportunities probably than Canada is. And stuff like this really gives me pause, you know, even though I could, you know, choose to move to a place like, you know, New York or California, where they seem pretty dedicated from the outside, at least, to preserving those rights. It's all sort of up in the air now. The political climate seems very, very hostile and unpredictable. And I, you know, the only other thing I'll say is I wish that there was like something really concrete that we could do over here to help. But I mean, the best thing I think that I can offer is like just to say that anyone who comes to Canada, you're going to find a perhaps more accepting environment for these sort of things.
Yeah.
At least for now.
Yeah. It's going to be even more difficult as time goes by. There's states like Missouri, I believe, that's been considering laws to enact what's called a conspiracy of abortion, meaning if you're in Missouri and you go to California to get an abortion, the state of Missouri can still convict you of a crime for committing to plan that abortion. I mean, that could be something that could happen across other states. So we'll see what happens with that. One other thing I wanted to mention about this issue before we move on and talk to you guys is specifically in Clarence Thomas's opinion, he talked about other cases that he wanted to reconsider and quote correct on, because the nature of this decision means that the Constitution no longer protects women's rights to do this. It also means that consequently, the decisions that were made in similar reasoning with other cases are also suspect, including Obergefell's, which was the case back in 2015. You guys remember when gay marriage was legalized across the United States. There was Lawrence, which determined that you didn't have to have a prescription or be married to get birth control, and other cases too that talk about just the criminalization of LGBT people. And it's weird to see. It's weird to see that we could just have all of our rights taken away, but yeah, it's quite possible. And if it does happen, others at the ACA are committed to continuing to talk about these issues and to continue the fight, as it were, to see what we can do. But for now, MD, I think it's good that we talk to some other people. So let's go ahead and do that. I want to start just as a good segue here. We're going to talk to Mark, who is calling in from Mississippi. Mark, you're live on Talk Heathen. What's going on?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. It's kind of an interesting situation. I am still a theist, and so I'm on the Facebook discussion groups. On one page, I'm arguing in favor of the resurrection of Jesus, and on another page, I'm arguing with Christian people about abortion. And I'm having a lot more fun arguing against the Christians because they don't understand the Bible as well as I do. And, I quote them Exodus 21 and some other passages in Exodus that talk about abortion, and they just get pissed off when you bring it up, and that's a lot of fun. But I used to be an OBGYN, so I have done abortions. I did not do it as a career move. I just did one. I was in the Navy. I did one at a Navy hospital. This girl said she wasn't going to take care of her diabetes, and if the pregnancy was a risk to her, she did not want the pregnancy. So I did a bunch of paperwork so she could have an abortion. And in the end, I decided, well, what's the difference if I do the paperwork versus if I let somebody else do the abortion or I do the abortion? So I ended up manning up and doing the abortion myself. And I've done that. And I've also done some medical abortions as well. But there's a lot of ways you could probably work around it, but you got to be careful because they're really coming down on people. I just think a woman's right to choose is her business, and you can't use a Bible to argue against it.
I agree, Mark. The Bible is very scant in some of its references to abortion, and the ones that do happen there seem to be suspect. For example, there is a verse, I believe it's in Numbers chapter 14, if I'm not mistaken, that seems to describe a priest's ability to give an abortificent. I believe that's how you say it, right? An abortificent?
It was Numbers 5. I quoted it today.
Numbers 5. There you go. Yes. Numbers 5. Basically, it's a procedure that says, well, if you suspect that your wife is cheating, you can give them this thing. And if they have an abortion, then that confirms that your wife was cheating. Like, I believe that's the context of this verse. Obviously, it doesn't work like that. There's a lot of Mediterranean cultures and really worldwide cultures that have ideas of giving people this thing that causes abortion. But like medically induced abortion has been a thing for a long time. Numbers 5:11-31. Thanks for that, crew. It's obviously happened in these cultures, and Jesus himself doesn't specifically talk about it in any particular capacity. So it's very debatable whether this is even a Christian issue on some level. You also have to consider that abortion is a natural thing. Most conceptions do not go all the way. they end in abortion. Wonder about that, when we talk about abortion in this country, what we're really talking about is medically assisted abortion, because abortion happens on its own all the time. So you have to wonder, in a universe where God cares about the individual souls inhabited in every single creature that comes to life, so to say, why it just happens on its own with no particular reason. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So yeah, I agree with you, Mark. It's not very good to use the Bible to defend this stuff. There doesn't seem to be a lot of good evidence.
But well, what do Christians point to in the Bible to support it? What have you found, Mark? What do Christians point to?
A lot of people were quoting me today on the Christian side, the Ten Commandments and thou shalt not kill. And I counter them with Psalms 137, verse 8 and 9, where it says, happy is he who dashes their little ones' heads against the rocks, which is talking about the Babylonians. But I'm like, it says thou shalt not kill, but it says you should kill the Babylonian children. This is where my knowledge of the Bible helps me counter the arguments saying that the fetus is human and it's not.
Yeah. If you want to make an argument that a fetus is human, you can't use the Bible. You'd have to go to medical science. And even then, I don't think medical science really, there is no objective definition of what it means to be a human at any given point in that process, right? Like we can talk about systems that are at play. We could talk about when a heartbeat happens or when certain things develop. But like that's the limit of my understanding, at least. I'm not the doctor here. But, you know,
point, you have to put a value of personhood onto the fetus, right? And the question, I think, comes down to when that happens. And I'm curious, Mark, where you would draw the line, because you seem to support abortion rights to a certain extent, but I'm curious as to how far that goes. Like, how late term an abortion would you be comfortable performing or condoning?
Well, I have some things to say about that. Like, when somebody has a miscarriage, the general rule of thumb in the hospital is if the fetus is over 20 weeks, the remains are treated like a corpse. They're given to the family, and they are allowed to have a funeral. If it's before 20 weeks, it's considered tissue and goes to pathology for whatever they do to the specimen. And I remember when I was in the Navy, I made a comment that about tissue, and all of a sudden I had a chaplain calling me saying there was an allegation that you referred to the fetus as tissue. And I said, well, that's what it is. That's what it is if it's not 20 weeks. So that's where the cutoff is in most hospitals.
But what's the what is the actual reasoning for that line? Because that seems like I don't think there's anything developmentally significant about 20 weeks versus 19 plus 6.
There really is, and it's more of an arbitrary, I think.
Right. So this is what this is why I'm asking you, Mark, because you say that you are Bible believing and that you're also pro-choice, which I think that there needs to be more people like you, the pro-choice aspect. But I'm curious as to how far it goes, because if you really believe that a woman has the right to choose, that means they have the right to choose at any point in the pregnancy, correct?
Yes, they do. I don't have a strong opinion on where to draw the line. I know when I was stationed in Guam, there was a group that performed abortions, and I was friends with those guys, and they actually invited me to go into their practice, but I just did not want to do it professionally. But I was delivering a baby at Guam Memorial Hospital, and there was a doctor there who had a patient who was pregnant through incest, and she was too late that they could do the abortion in the office. And what he did is an amniocentesis and put a compound in there that stopped the baby's heart. So then he was able to do it at the hospital as a fetal demise. Mm-hmm. And that's it, how he got around it.
Interesting.
And then once you get past 20 weeks, you have to deliver
it. I mean, I think it would be interesting to dive even deeper into your specific beliefs on this, although I don't know if we have time for that, Dan. But it's very interesting to hear this perspective from a Christian, because I don't hear that very often.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding, MD, I mean, I do hear it from other Christians, but I think they probably say the same thing as Mark, where it's hard to say, you know, line might be a little bit arbitrary, because either way, I think Mark and I would agree that you can't use the Bible as a reference for this kind of thing, especially for our modern understanding of medical science and what's actually happening in a pregnancy. To be honest, I couldn't tell you exactly when or when not this line should be drawn. I have to draw to people like you, people who are real experts in this stuff. You know what? I'm an expert on weird conspiracy theories and, like, you know, bullshit on the internet. I'm not an expert on what happens in embryology and what happens in the studies of these fields. I can only quote and refer to the people who have been really studying this for a long time. And ultimately, I think that's what we have when we make decisions like this, at least how to make informed decisions like this, right?
Sure. I mean, but I think ultimately you're going to be putting a value onto something, right?
Yeah.
A developmental structure, some functional phenomenon. And to me, that's, you can't discover that through scientific method. You said, it can give you like a more solid foundation, but at some point you sort of have to decide, I don't know, as a society or as an individual or based on your moral code and how you think things ought to be, what is important and what we should value.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that we should all sort of realize, everyone who's on the pro-choice side of this debate, is the whole like human life, human tissue, humanity, the humanity aspect of it is not the critical component, right?
Yeah.
There's something else.
I 100%
agree. And I think we have to continue thinking to figure out what that might be that we think deserves protection and rights. But I don't know what it is necessarily, although I have thoughts.
I have thoughts too.
I think it's up for debate.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like a capacity for suffering. But yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. If you look at Exodus 21, somebody accused me of finding that passage on the internet. I found that in a Bible study. It talks about if two men fight and the woman loses her baby, the penalty for that is a fine paid to the father of the baby. It's not it's not a death penalty offense. That clearly makes a distinction between the life of the mother. If the mother dies, it's eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, life for life. Clearly making a distinction between the life of the fetus and the life of the baby. Doesn't give you how many weeks. I know that if you pass 20 weeks, you can't just do a D&C. You actually have to go through a labor process. And those are very hard labors. I've done these when the baby dies, and I've had to deliver the baby, and I hated doing it because it was just
That line is like a technical line, right? It's like, what does our technology and our methods allow us to do? And presumably you could push that line further back with some like really good neonatologists who might be able to keep, you know, I don't know what the record is, but it's probably around like 16 to 18 weeks that we've had like preterm births that have been able to survive, you know, and completely sort of recover and live normal lives. So like the 20 week thing is still it's almost becoming outdated at this point, right? Sorry?
Yeah. Well, the earliest I had was 22 weeks. And the science at the time when I was doing this was about 24 weeks. And I got a miracle baby, so to speak, in 22 weeks.
Yeah. And some I've been peripherally involved in some cases that have gone before 20 weeks, but only because it's like, you know, you find the right fetus, the right infant, and the right neonatologist, and the right technology and tools and knowledge and everything. The point is that this 20 week thing that you're talking about, as I think you agree, is sort of arbitrary. And it's just based on what people are generally able to manage.
Yep, I agree. Viability outside the womb has its limits when we're talking about the philosophical, you know, line to draw in the sand when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we do have a lot of people who want to talk to us today. So I'm going to go ahead and end this call here. But Mark, thanks so much for giving us your opinion and your thoughts on this. And good for you for talking to other Christians for something that you believe in on this particular issue. We're definitely in agreement with you there that you know, the Bible isn't a good source to use for this. All of that says is you're getting a culture's understanding of the time of what they thought was significant about this, and that's really all we can get, you know.
And frankly, Mark, you might have a better chance of changing minds than we will, right? Because you're sort of coming at it from the inside of some of these communities.
Absolutely.
So continue doing your good work.
For sure. And with that in mind, I want to let you guys know that if you shop on Amazon, then you can support the ACA at no cost to you. You can simply visit tiny.cc/AmazonMilesACA, Amazon's Mile ACA, Smile ACA. Just read that link. And I said Amazon's Mile instead of Smile. That's really funny. Or it's at tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA. And you can designate the Atheist Community of Austin as your selected charity. And Amazon will donate a portion of their profit directly to the ACA. And I also want to let you know that the Talk Heathen merch is back. You can go to tiny.cc/merchaca to get some of your favorite items. There's the t-shirts, there's the hoodies, and we've even got a special limited edition something every single month. So you should definitely check that out in the stores there. And it's all really cool, really cool stuff. Got those phone cases, mugs too. Yeah, lots
of
different
stuff. Toast t-shirt. That's fun.
The Toast t-shirt is pretty cool. I like that. I should probably get one for myself, honestly. We also want to let you know that we have a channel that houses all of the shows of the ACA in audio podcast form. So if you like listening to these shows, you should visit tiny.cc/AENpodcasts. And finally, you can become a part of the Talk Heathen community in our fan-run Facebook page at tiny.cc/FBTHG. So if you want to talk to other folks, sometimes hosts are in there, sometimes folks in the crew, but just other fans in general, you can talk to folks on there. And it's a cool place to hang out with like-minded people. So definitely check out all of those resources if you haven't already. And for now, let's go ahead and go to another call. We've got a lot of different calls from people. I am interested in talking to Charles from Ohio, though. So I think we should do that one next. Let's talk to Charles from Ohio. You're live on Talk Heathen. What's up?
Good afternoon. I am a first-time caller, so thank you for taking the time to conversate with me.
Welcome.
Before I get into my topic of discussion, I would just like to, as a disclaimer, state that your previous caller is by no means a Christian. The propositions that he introduced are a complete oxymoron. But be that as it may, I'd like to move on to my topic of discussion. So I'm a Christian, And I am under just, the impression
before, that, sorry, before we move on, we'll just signpost the No True Scotsman fallacy, and then we'll continue.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so my topic of discussion is that I am under the impression you gentlemen are atheists, correct?
Let's not be pedantic on this one.
Without pedantic, if I to the general audience, to the general public, yes, I would call myself an atheist, former Christian, now an atheist. Yeah.
Okay, and I guess my follow-up would be, why do you consider yourself to be an atheist?
Well, it's an interesting question. I'm assuming you're interested in this in regards specifically to the Christian God, since you talked about Christianity here. And why I don't believe in the Christian God in particular is quite simple. I don't think there's enough reason to. I don't believe there's enough evidence to support his existence and the particular claims that are made in the Bible and by other Christian people that attest to his existence, I find to be suspect. And I don't think using critical reason that one should be able to come to the conclusion that a God exists, or that Jesus was God, or that Jesus performed some of the things he said he did. Everything that falls in line with that. So,
okay. Yeah, I mean, my reasoning basically lines up with that. I'm like trained as a scientist. I like recently finished my doctoral thesis. And so my standard of evidence for believing something is relatively high. And I think that evidence to believe something needs to be very specific and strong. And I don't think that any religious belief that I've heard of has lived up to it to match their claims.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd like to touch on that. So what standard of evidence or criteria would need to be met in order to convince you that a God exists?
Yeah, well, the things that have been attested to in the Bible have to have actually happened. We have to have enough reason to believe that they happened. Starting from that would be good. But also some of the daily things that are supposed to be happening according to the Bible. For example, believers being able to perform miracles, or that acts of the Holy Spirit are being done. I'd have to see evidence of that, because those are the things that Christianity claims to be true, and also claims to be attestations of God, everything else that happens within Christianity. There could be other things too. Could be angels, could be demons. I mean, all the things that are unique claims to Christianity that attest to a supernatural existence somehow. I haven't seen any real evidence of that. It seems people say that they happen, but we've lived in a time where half of everybody on earth has some form of way to record stuff. I don't know if that's specifically true, but more so than ever, right? We've been able to gather information at speeds which people in the past could never even comprehend, and we've yet to find anything that we could reasonably believe to be true in that front.
Okay, it sounds like you bunched a whole bunch of different things in there.
Sure. Well, Christianity isn't just one particular claim, right? Christianity encompasses a lot of different claims. So it's hard to kind of boil it down to one thing, right?
This is the thing that I was thinking. Charles, you said, what would make you believe in God? And that's like, as it is, a very broad claim, right? Like when you say God, there's a lot of stuff potentially wrapped up in that. I would want to know exactly what you mean. And presumably, but what some people say is that it's like, a supernatural, non-material entity, blah, blah, blah. And I would start out by saying you have to show that even something non-material existing is possible, right? Because everything that we know is material in some sense.
Well, when you say material, what do you mean by material? Can you define it?
I mean, it's composed of or influences matter and or energy.
Okay. So I'm answering two different questions here. So I really didn't get an answer to my question, which was, what is the standard of evidence or criteria that needs to be
met? It depends on the specific claim.
Yeah. Are you saying, did Jesus perform miracles? Are you saying God did something at X time, like, or that God exists in general? There's different things there.
Yeah. And God is just a label for like a bunch of potential things, right? Like you could be, I don't know, like a pantheist or something and think that, a blade of grass is an expression of God, but I'm not right. Like, you could also think that God is a very specific entity with specific powers, right? So you have to be more specific about what your claim is before we can answer what evidence we would need to believe it.
Yeah, for sure.
But you don't actually have the standard. You're saying it depends on the specific proposition being made by a theist.
Well, yeah, I mean,
the standard of evidence always depends on the nature of the claim.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so in the context of what we're talking about, we're directly speaking about the God of the Bible.
Okay, but that is also a variable. Like, you just said that you don't believe the previous caller is a proper Christian. Presumably, you believe in a different God than they believe in, and they both, you and him, think they believe in a Christian God, but you both are conferring or attributing different properties, specifically beliefs about abortions, onto this God. So you're going to have to be more specific than saying the Christian God or the God of the Bible. You need to give us very specific properties. And for each property that you add, that needs to be justified by some evidence.
When I define God, I mean a supernatural being that is completely sovereign over everything that exists.
Okay, so one that intervenes in our world, or one that,
yes,
you know, kind of created everything? Okay, so actively intervenes in our world.
Both.
Okay, so if there's a God that actively intervenes in our world, then, you know, the criteria I would say there is I need to see something of him actively intervening in our world that couldn't be explained by natural causes.
But more than that, you have to show that something. So I would want to know what you mean by supernatural.
Right. There's
and then
that
I would
too.
Want to know how you could possibly have evidence for something supernatural, and then what that evidence is.
Yeah.
Creation. We'll start with creation.
The moon. That's not evidence of anything.
The sun.
Those things existing aren't necessarily evidence of the supernatural. Again, we have natural explanations for all of those things. We may not have complete explanations, but we do have a starting point for a lot of these things that don't invoke a God in any real sense of that word, right?
Like, and frankly, we have reasonably and meaningfully complete explanations of how our sun certainly was formed.
Sure.
And there, you know, there is no God required.
Yeah.
Well, that's, now we're talking origins. I was getting off topic where you asked a specific question. I was trying to answer it. But now we're talking.
Yeah, you mentioned creation. That wasn't a good way to look at this, right? Like, that doesn't convince
us in
any way.
That was the evidence that you brought us. And we said that's not good evidence. And we give you reasons why it's not good evidence. So what's your next thing?
Right, but
like, are we just going to go down the list of all of the crappy excuses you have to believe, or are you going to get to something that's actually relevant? Like, address our question.
No, because
how do you prove that something supernatural even exists? Anything. A supernatural, non-intervening, you know, gremlin who doesn't have any particular sovereignty over anything.
This is your prove to me. Introduce evidence for something that you haven't given a proper criteria for.
I'm asking you to provide the evidence that would convince someone that anything supernatural exists.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm asking, what's your standard of evidence?
Here's the thing, Charles. Here's the thing. When Jesus was on earth and he claimed that he was God, his proof was that he did miracles. Right. If he hadn't done those miracles, I don't know why the disciples would have any reason to believe that he was God. Right. According to the story. Because why would you? If MD said he was God and that he had these powers and he did absolutely nothing to show that, I have no reason to believe him. Right. So in the same way, I've never seen any miracles. I have never seen anything that couldn't be explained by natural means, or at least couldn't be, you know, done somewhat within natural means, because obviously I don't have complete explanations for everything, but you know, the supernatural is usually a last resort for any kind of explanation. I need to see something like that, right? Like, it's pretty simple.
I don't think that's a good standard of evidence. Because
why not? It was good enough for Jesus. Wait a minute. Why not? That's what Jesus did.
This is a historical claim, and it's not something.
Well, it's a historical claim now. It's only a historical claim now, Charles. It's only a historical claim now because nobody can do it today, right? Because nobody can do it today. If you could actually do it today, if a Christian could actually do these things, then we wouldn't even be having a discussion about this. But because it hasn't actually happened, because
Jesus performing,
I mentioned Jesus because that's why people believed he was God. Because why would you believe he was God otherwise, right? If we're defining God as a supernatural being, we're defining a being that can do the supernatural. So, I have to see the supernatural.
That's a completely different topic.
No, we're not talking about faith, man. We're just talking about evidence for believing things.
Well, no,
right?
That's the reason why people believe, and they believe because of faith.
Nobody's ever seen
that. No, they didn't. They didn't believe. No, no, no. They did not believe because of faith. They believed allegedly because they saw these miracles happen. Like, that's different. They didn't have, they didn't trust that these miracles happened. They allegedly, they were eyewitnesses to it.
I'm speaking in our modern time.
Okay. Well, today you have to have faith because you haven't seen it yourself, right? Unless you're going to tell us, Charles, that you have seen miracles. I'm assuming you haven't, right? Because I'm assuming, I mean, really nobody has.
When you say miracle, what do you mean by miracle?
When I say miracles, I mean the invocation of the supernatural, doing something that could not be done by natural means.
Well, that's a broad term.
It sure is. It very much is.
For an example.
Yeah. An example would be me multiplying bread for a few thousand people, fish and bread, or maybe walking on water without the assistance of technology, or turning water into wine without the process of nuclear fusion, you know? That could be a few things.
But do you see what you're doing? You're invoking things of the past. And that's the point I was trying to make earlier. This is a historical point.
That's why people believe. Jesus
multiplying bread to feed the 5,000, walking on water, raising from the dead, raising people from the dead. These are all historical things we cannot observe in our modern world. So that's not really
standard. What do you mean?
Why not?
Demonstrate.
I've raised people from the dead, Charles. Whenever I do CPR and get return of spontaneous circulation, I bring people back from the dead. Am I performing miracles? Mm-hmm. Here's my problem, Charles, is that you're asking me to believe in something supernatural, and I don't even know what supernatural means. I get what Dan's trying to say. Dan is using a sort of colloquial definition of supernatural things that, you know, most people would agree with. But from a scientific perspective, I don't know what supernatural means. No one's defined what that is. And you're asking me what my standard of evidence for a supernatural entity would be. I don't know. Tell me what supernatural even means.
Yeah, it's a good point. I am using colloquial assumptions in order to expedite the conversation here, but MD is totally right. I mean, if we're talking about in a strict philosophical sense, it is up to the person making the claim that the supernatural being exists and defining what that even means, what the supernatural even means in this context, because even that can be fraught with differences in opinion, right?
And it may be the case that Charles.
My question
this might,
why were you an atheist?
Charles.
And then Charles,
Charles, this may answer your question, and you may not like the answer, but it's true for me. There may not be any evidence that would convince me. There may not be evidence that's possible to convince me, because from my belief, my epistemology and my ontology is based on the existence of material evidence in a naturalistic worldview. And if you're saying that there's something outside of that, it is sort of like inherently not necessarily investigatable using a natural worldview, a naturalistic worldview, right? So I may not ever be able to do a test, a scientific experiment to see if there is an entity that exists outside of the known natural universe, right? No one may be able to do that. And that area of knowledge just remains unknown and uninvestigable to us. And I'm fine with that. And I'm fine with only basing my beliefs about what exists and what doesn't on what I can actually observe and have reasons to believe in. I'm not going to just believe that, you know, there's something that exists in, you know, outside beyond the realms that we can perceive just because some old book says so.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess you can see why I would take issue with that standard, because there are a lot of things that we cannot actually observe or perceive yet.
And I don't believe in those things.
Name a couple. Air.
No. Oxygen, like what?
Electricity, cold.
What do you mean? I can observe electricity.
We can't see these, but they do in fact exist.
Whoa, wait. When you say we can observe them, you just mean, when you say observe, you're thinking like it goes, see it from our eyeballs. But no, we can observe them through other ways. Like our eyes are not the only method of observation.
I mean, hell, I can feel a static shock.
Yeah.
And observe electricity.
You can see electricity too. Yeah. Like you can see it, that happen. You can go to YouTube and type in electricity videos, and I guarantee you, you will see electricity.
And I guarantee you, Charles, if you find something that you can't find observable evidence for, it's a thing that I don't believe in.
Yeah.
And I pointed to creation.
Right. What do you mean? I can observe what you call creation.
Your counter to that was, well, we have other scenarios that explain how those things came to be. And now you're making a claim, right? You're making a counterclaim to what I believe to be creation. So now the burden of proof is on you to demonstrate that is actually what happened.
Yes,
you're absolutely right.
There are fields of study. There are fields of study, scientists who have built their lives around it, and journals whose business it is to disseminate the research findings that justify those conclusions. There's hundreds of thousands of pages of data and information that you can investigate yourself that support those models of air quotes creation.
Yeah.
Well, which one? I mean, you have multiple.
What do you mean, which one?
Stream theory. You have crunch theory. You have Big Bang theory. I mean,
you're talking about origins of the universe claims, right? There's a difference between origin of the universe claims and like things that exist within the universe. We have pretty definite explanations about things existing within the universe itself, right? Like you don't have to cite string theory to talk about the origins of the sun, for example. Mm-hmm. Like you can just talk about basic astronomical principles. And by the way, we do see the creation of stars happen. We have evidence of that. We have observable evidence of that.
Recorded through telescopes.
Right, which is why how we can come to the conclusion that our star, our sun, formed the same way.
But do you have an explanation as to how they are formed?
What do you mean how? Like you mean like gravity and forces? Yeah, like I guess so, yeah.
In short, like a big ball of gas
that
has a lot of gravity and the gravity slowly pulls it together and that energy acting on the matter causes it to spin and heat up and contract until it reaches a fusion point and ignites. And that is how a star is formed.
But that's just one hypothesis.
No, that is the currently accepted model across all of scientific understanding, okay?
And here's the thing,
subject
Charles.
Subject to change, correct?
Wait, what? Say that again. What?
Subject to change, correct?
Subject to change, yes. Refinement.
Yeah.
Right? So this is the thing that gets me a lot is these broad principles are not going to change, right? Yeah. It's like Newton came up with the laws of gravity, defined the laws of gravity, and then Einstein came along. He didn't change it. It's not like how we understand gravity like completely changed and suddenly, you know, matter was not actually pulled towards other centers of mass. Einstein just refined our understanding, made it more detailed. It's not like science does 180s all the time on its understanding of things. It's incremental refinements, getting through all of the little details about how things happen.
Yeah.
Well, these are men who allegedly discovered these things, but you would agree that these things already did exist. So just because somebody comes along later down the road and says, hey, this is gravity, hey, this is electricity, etc., these things already predate these men. They had already existed.
Yeah, what's your point?
Why do we need somebody to explain it for us?
We need somebody to explain it so that we can understand it and also counter these ideas that, oh, well, it just came from God and God is the best explanation for how these things work. Because even at the end of the day,
why do you have the need to counter it?
Because it's not true. What do you mean?
People used to think that lightning came from Zeus or Thor, right? And now we know that it's not because a bunch of scientists did some experiments and observations.
I mean, Charles, you obviously have an interest in what you want to believe is true because you're calling the show and you're wanting to tell us that, no, the truth is God created these things. If you didn't care about that, you wouldn't even bother sharing it with us. We are interested in the truth too. And we want to know the best methodologies and the best ways of getting to that truth. And we think it is through observable evidence. Can Christianity make the same? Can it make the same statements? Can it use observable evidence to get to its claims? I don't think so. I really don't. But anyway, Charles, we have to...
for calling the show was to find out why you were an atheist and if there was anything that I could introduce to convince you that atheism is not true.
Can you do a miracle for us, Charles?
You go off on a litany of different things, and that's not... I don't think that's a standard that anybody could meet. And that's only just...
Well, that's kind of our point, Charles.
It's a standard that no religion has met, at least. But hey, a lot of scientists have met that burden of proof.
Yep. A lot of like the people that have met our standard have convinced us of how the world works. And religious claims have not. And like, if you're seeing the problem there, then you're understanding why we're not religious. I mean, that's really the short end of it. But Charles, we've been talking to you for a bit. We've got a lot of other people who want to talk to us. If you want to talk to us again, you can feel free to call in at a different time or maybe talk to the chat. But I think we've made our point clear. Like, you have an issue because our reasoning doesn't get to what you believe. Like, that's what it sounds like your problem is. And yeah, of course it doesn't, because why would it? There's no reason for us to get there. You know, like, if you think about why you believe in these things, why do you believe that God created the earth? Why do you believe in these things? Is it because of observations made, or is it because a book claimed it, that a book that people made, right? Which is going to be more reliable at the end of the day? There's a lot of books that have claimed a lot of things. So we have to figure out, we have to use some sort of method and figure out what's true and what's not. So
call us at Truth Wanted, Charles. This will be a fun discussion to continue.
Call us at Truth Wanted. We're just going to siphon all the Talk Heathen calls, much to the ACA's discredit. But hey, before we get on to another caller, we have a quick promo that we want to show you guys. So check this out.
Monogamy is not healthy for them, or doesn't feel good to them, or doesn't work for them. Is that also possible?
Yeah, the old joke is that a sex addict is just anybody who has more sex than their therapist.
Well, philosophically, you have arbitrarily chosen to believe something, believe in a Christianity, we'll say, and you think that that's superior, but you don't have any actual evidence, any actual basis to think that that's a superior moral system, do you?
How many times have we had callers call in and say, oh, I'm the only one in such and such a town that's an atheist, and then the host says, oh, have you tried these three atheist organizations that are just down the street from you? I mean, it's, you feel like you're alone, but we're all alone together.
There's another option, which would be to go, if there's not evidence for the God and we can't explain how we could tell the difference between God and our imagination, maybe you don't believe in the God. Maybe you just go, I don't know.
Secular Rarity said that, you know, we don't have proof for God. I have proof that people exist. So I would like to know, what is 100% proof that people exist?
Are you going to go into solipsism?
Because
you definitely
please,
don't have enough time for that. You realize that, right?
And we're back to the show here. We are going to go ahead and take some more calls. You're joining us here again with Objectively Dan and MD Aware, some of the ACA's finest hosts, I must say. Really great to be here. We are going to, I think, we want to talk to Andrew, MD. Yep. Want to talk to Andrew? Agreed. Let's talk to Andrew, who is calling in from Maine. Andrew, you are live on Talk Heathen. What's up?
Hi. I called to talk about abortion, but can I really, that guy really comment on something supernatural, or do you want to focus on abortion?
We would prefer that you stick to the topic that you agreed to with the call screener, if you don't mind.
Okay. I only was triggered by what he just said, but I'll stick to the topic. Sure. I called in to say that the abortion decision actually leads to a more democratic process because it throws it back to state representatives who are elected as opposed to
Andrew, that's
finish,
so funny.
Man. Well, no, that's, no, let okay. him finish. Okay. I'm an ignorant Canadian. I need to hear
go
this.
Ahead. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, Andrew.
Final part. Yeah, my final comment on that was, you know, I hear people complain about, oh, my rights this, my rights that. But the question is, where do your rights come from? Why are you entitled to those? And I think when people actually examine that, they find some troubling questions. So that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. Hey, Andrew, when people were owned as slaves and states had the right to determine whether you could be a slave or not, do you think that was a good idea or a bad idea?
No, obviously, I think it was bad, and we eventually...
Well, hold on, wait, Andrew, wait. It's states' rights, though. It's a more democratic process, right? Because that's what you're arguing here.
Yeah, and eventually we got to the place where the states don't enforce that, so I don't know what you're trying to...
Oh, so it's almost as if the state shouldn't enforce other people, particularly when it comes to their liberties and maybe what they do with their own bodies. Well...
So the states... I don't know what you're... No, the states... Well, it's more democratic at this point in time because...
Democratic because guess what, Andrew? We did not vote for the Supreme Court. I did not vote for the Supreme Court. Did you vote for the Supreme Court? Exactly. No, we did not vote for the Supreme Court. The president... No, I'm not finished, Andrew. The president... five Supreme Court justices, might I add, were not chosen by the popular president, chosen by the unpopularly elected president, got to decide who got to be on the court. And that court decided that the states were going to be making those choices. Now, I did not get to vote on what the state, my state of Texas, decided for women. This was not a democratic process in no freaking conception of that term. Absolutely not. And I have to bring this up. States' rights, this idea that states is a more democratic way, all that means is a better way to eliminate the rights of other people. It means unequal rights for all American citizens, because now all U.S. citizens do not have same rights. There are some people in some states that have more rights than in other states.
Okay, so that's the reason I say that is because the Supreme Court, you're right, it's not elected. And all they did was they gave the decision to the elected people. So now the elected people, which presumably represent the will of the people who elect them, they are the ones who make the decision now. So it is more democratic.
So I have a question. And this is a legit question. Do you think that democracy is the best way to make these sorts of decisions?
I'm not sure what I think is the best way. I mean, obviously, I have my opinions on what should be done, but I haven't really thought about what I think is the best way. But I know that people
think about this. If there is, so assume that an entire population votes, 100% voting turnout, and 60% belongs to one group and 40% belongs to another group, and everyone votes, and the group that is in the majority, the 60%, continually vote to marginalize and disadvantage the 40%. Is that a good way to make these decisions? Should everything be decided by democratic election and democratic voting? Does that lead to a fair and just society?
If you're trying to draw an analogy with America, that's not a good analogy. There are checks and balances in different
parts of power. I'm literally asking if democracy is the best way to solve these sorts of problems. And I'm Canadian, right? So I ask these questions in the context of my political situation as well.
Pure democracy with no checks and balances, probably not. But I would not say that's what America has right now.
So what kind of checks and balances do you think that we should have? Do you think maybe we should all agree that people should have a certain set of rights, and those rights are not democratically chosen? Those rights are declared as all rights. So if you think about it, because you're right, you know, rights are not granted. Rights are declared. People decide, I decide that I have this right and I want all people to have this right. And so rights are demanded, declared by groups of people. And then a government may choose to, you know, grant that in a in like a legal sense. But the question is, should we be voting on what those rights are, or should we be using some other process to determine what someone's rights are?
I think ideally you say your rights come from God, but I think obviously a lot of people disagree with that. But my point is,
most people in the world would probably disagree with what, you know, you think the rights granted to you by God are, right? Because most people do not have your religion.
Yeah. So my point, though, is especially people who, at the end of the day, if you don't believe in your rights come from some higher source, it's just, you know, arbitrary people saying, oh, my rights are this. And I don't know if you at that point you say, oh, consensus is the determining factor. Oh, it's just the party in power is a determining factor. But I mean, there's no real solid foundation there anyways. So I mean, to complain about your rights seems kind of silly to me.
Well, the fact is, you can either do something that's legal by the state or you can't. Right. So like rights are like an objective thing you can look at wherever they come from. Right. Like that seems like a red herring. Right. The fact that you are deciding that the state, individual states, is somehow a more democratic process than giving it on a federal level, that is what I take issue with. Because again, I posit the point that all that means is that some people in some states are going to have rights and some people in other states are not going to have rights. And that is the problem that I'm trying to demonstrate here. Again, it used to be the case in this country that individual slave owners were recognized by their states as having the right to own other people. It used to be that you could marry another woman of color, and that would be considered illegal in some places and fine in other places. It used to be that you could marry someone of the same sex and not be recognized in some states because individual states' rights didn't give people those liberties. It's because we made that on a federal level that we granted across all states that everybody, all U.S. citizens, could have that right. What has happened is that we've had those rights taken away. We did not make it more democratic. We did not make it more equal for people. We've taken rights away. We've not expanded our rights for people. I mean, this isn't, in my opinion, Andrew, this is not a good way to live. Not a good way to, have rights. If it can just be arbitrarily taken away at a state level. To me, that doesn't seem fair, even if it's by our quote unquote elected representatives. Right? Because if 55% of the country wants one thing and 45% wants another thing, suddenly you're taking away the rights for those 55%
I mean, really, you're just backing whoever supports your decision, because if the Supreme Court had the opposite of opinion and said, oh, abortions are illegal everywhere, you probably wouldn't have said, oh, that's a better method. I think it should be determined somehow. So abortion was only protected by...
I'm of the opinion that women should have rights and people of uteruses should have rights. Like, period.
Okay, but I'm saying that the Supreme Court, which is unelected, was protecting abortion, and now it's not protected by an unelected body. So, so the elected body is going to be the one making decisions. And if people don't like the elected body's decisions, they'll vote in new people. So it is more representative of the will of the people, whether you like it or not.
Well, why does that matter?
I think.
Why does that matter?
Oh, okay.
That's the point I was making, is it's more representative of the will of the people, whether you like it or not.
Why does that matter? Does the will of the people have anything to do with someone's rights?
Apparently, according to Dan, it does, because the rights need to be declared by a government. So according to him, yes.
No, they need to be enforced by a government.
No, he said declared. He said as long as it's declared somewhere. And you're probably ignoring the fact that in the Constitution it does mention God. So, I mean, you're probably just ignoring that as well.
Well, it should be ignored because we shouldn't be a state that's based on any religion. But besides that, I don't give a shit. Let me get this. Andrew, I don't give a shit if the Supreme Court says this should be a thing or not be a thing. I think people with uteruses should have rights. I don't know what you're not getting about this. Yeah, is it an unelected body of officials that are enforcing these rights and deciding these rights? Yes, whether they're elected body official or non-elected body officials, they should have those rights, period. Like, that's at the end of the day, they should have those rights. I'm not saying that because the current state is enforcing it, that means that they should have rights or not. That's not even where I'm coming from. And besides this, the elections in our country are gerrymandered to the point where they are not equally representative of the nation as a whole. Again, most people in this country wanted abortion to be legal, more than half. This is a known statistic. And yet, as we come to now, we are finding that states are not giving it to all those people that do want it, right? We are making it illegal for some places and legal in other places.
I mean, the bottom line is the people who are deciding are elected, whether or not you don't like the jurisdictions. I mean,
can I ask you a question, Andrew?
So
you're aware of like the International Charter of Human Rights and Freedoms, right? Like Geneva Convention after the Second World War. A bunch of groups from the UN got together and they said, here are the rights that we all agree should be granted to everyone in the world. Okay.
Okay.
What happens if some other country doesn't have laws that enforce those rights or recognize those rights? Do the people in that country have rights or do they not have rights? For instance, one of the things in the Geneva Convention is you can't torture people, okay? You can't torture a civilian. And yet some countries will torture people. Do those people living in those countries, do they have the right to not be tortured or do they not have it?
I mean, it all depends on where you think rights come from. I think that they have the right not to be tortured because I believe that that's a thing that comes from God. If you take your rights from the government, then yes, the government has the right to torture them if that's not outlawed.
Okay, all right, fine. I'll play ball with you. So if you think that rights come from God, then what does anyone have? Why is anyone voting on it? Why is it a good thing to have a democratic process around it? You're saying that it's a good thing that it's democratic. I'm not sure. If we don't agree with it, we can move it out. But you think that all rights come from God anyways.
No, my argument was not the democratic process is the best process. I'm not sure that it is. But I'm saying to play to the ears of people who like to talk about democracy and will of the people and this and that, I'm trying to make a point from their point of view. So that's what I was doing.
Okay. Well, I don't buy that. I don't think rights come from democratic processes.
No, I don't think my rights come from the government, and I don't think my rights come from God. I know that you're making that assumption about me and probably other people who argue for rights by me, but there are some people that think that rights should exist just because we're people, that it comes from being a human being. And as a human being, you have a natural born right. Okay. Now, obviously, the United States actually uses this in some of its founding documents in talking about what kind of rights that we should have. Whether or not they're codified by the state doesn't actually matter to me whether I think people should have rights or not, right? Just because the state decides, oh, we don't have this right anymore, doesn't mean I think, oh, I guess we shouldn't have it either, because the state decides it.
I mean, really?
Like, that's not how my thinking works.
I mean, it just comes down to your arbitrary belief on what rights are then. I mean, you don't know, it's just whatever I believe, right? Because if someone says, yes, I believe humans have rights, but then they also consider the unborn a viable life and that the unborn should have the rights as well, then they disagree with you. It's just a matter of your own opinion then.
But there are reasons. There are still reasons why I think humans should have rights, right? If you were arguing to me, Andrew, that I think a rock should have rights, right? You should be able to like convince me of that. Because I don't think like rocks on their own should be able to vote. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like why should they be able to? You have to at least have, I can at least give you reasons to demonstrate why it's a good idea. And yes, it is somewhat arbitrary, but at the same time, it's not indefensible, right? There's a bit of a difference there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how do you defend the abortion of a baby that's not a baby that, you know, when you stick the pincers in to get it, its arms start moving to protect itself against the pincers?
That doesn't happen.
Baby that's 9 months.
I've performed abortions and that does not happen.
It does. I mean, it's literally documented.
No, it doesn't.
Your one person experience.
Andrew, you know? Remind me, what's your medical background, my friend? What's your experience with this?
I have a biology degree. I have 10 doctors in my family I'm related to. I mean, more by marriage.
Okay.
I mean,
you have a biology degree and you think that when abortions happen, they take pincers into people and pull babies out?
You know what, it's not actually a pincer.
No, I don't know what you mean. That's exactly what you said. Do you know what an abortion actually looks like? Do you know what happens?
They actually look different depending on what stage of the pregnancy it is. So
that's right. That's correct. And which part of the pregnancy do they stick the pincers in? I'm just curious.
No, it's not, the word is not pincer. I forget the word, but it's like some sort of metal instrument where they stick it in and they, you know, rip the baby out essentially. And the fact.
So Andrew, you're using emotionally charged language and value loaded language. And we don't use that clinically. What is usually done is something like a dilation and curettage, right? Where you remove the lining of the uterus during pregnancy, and the products of conception are embedded somewhere in there. Or if the pregnancy is far enough along, you induce labor. And then you say, well, either the fetus will survive or it won't. And then you manage the life of the fetus based on its viability.
I mean, and you're using a distancing language by calling it just a fetus. And, you know, I mean, it all comes
fetus
down
to... Fetus is the technical term.
No, but like, okay, so...
It's not a person, right? It's, well, at least most places don't grant it personhood. I would argue that even like the United States, even with this, doesn't grant personhood to fetuses.
Kill a pregnant woman, that's like double homicide. So, I mean, it's kind of murky there. But I don't even take the legal stance. I don't take the legal stance as my main authority. I mean, I don't know where it comes down to an arbitrary of I believe this versus you believe that. There's no greater standing. And I think lots of people do consider, I mean, there's no difference physically between a baby 1 minute before it comes out of the birth canal versus after. So, I mean, it's really hard for my
I mean, I think there are actually, there's actually a lot of physiologic differences, Andrew, and I would encourage you to go read maybe go back to your biology textbooks from your degree. What do you mean? There's huge changes in the pressures. Like, for instance, they're suddenly having to breathe on their own. So they have to cough out all of the amniotic fluid that they were breathing into their lungs. That's one thing. They have to start respirating on their own. They're no longer getting their nutrients and their blood flow from the placenta, right? There's a lot of physiologic changes that go on in the first few minutes after a baby is born.
Okay, not if the placenta hasn't been cut, and you're talking about environmental change.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't have a third leg. There's no extra arm. There's no extra organ.
Who cares?
Same physical matter.
Who cares?
Oh, God.
I mean, I care. I mean, I think you're.
You know, some infants are born with additional like limbs and stuff, right?
Okay, even if that were true, they would still have the limb 1 minute before it came out of the birth canal. There's no.
So what is your point, Andrew?
My point is that is. I mean, I'm getting into a deeper argument of what I think is life and not. And, you know, some people might even say I don't value life.
Why is life relevant? You're talking about the question you're trying to ask, I think, is you're trying to see where we should grant personhood rights to an individual, right? You're saying it's arbitrary. It's arbitrary to make it birth. I agree.
Okay. Well, again, like grant rights, I think rights come from, so we're God, so we're at a different place anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, right. if there's fertilization that takes place, if that is left to natural processes, there will be a baby that's born. So that's
maybe.
I think it happens, fertilization.
Maybe.
I
mean, maybe.
If there's not, you know, huge health complications, whatever, a baby is going to be born left to natural
processes. No, so
that is not necessarily true at all.
There's a much less than 50% chance that any fertilized embryo is actually going to result in a viable life. Less than 50%.
Okay, so I mean,
again, I would encourage you to go read a biology textbook.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're saying whether or not how viable it is what matters. But I mean, there are living humans that are not viable. So I think that's a terrible argument.
Correct. Why? I've also done organ retrieval operations on people who are air quotes not viable, right? We do that because we recognize that there is something that is no longer granting the person the same rights.
And Andrew, if you were listening to the call earlier, MD Aware criticized the viability argument. Like, he doesn't think it's the best criteria to use.
Mm-hmm. It's a practical criterion that we use.
And what do you think the criteria is? Because I don't actually know. I mean, I guess I can't attack a position if I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think that's good. Good point. But
I'll tell you what I think. I think that an individual's rights are related to their ability to suffer, their ability to feel or experience well-being, and the relationships they have with other people, which is why I think the fact that we're giving this choice to women and people with uteruses is important, because they are going to be the ones who have the most invested. And if they say, I don't actually care to continue this pregnancy, then that diminishes the value of that air quotes life.
Okay. By that,
Andrew, we have to move on. We've got other people that we need to talk to, and there's probably going to be other people that'll make your points. If you really want to talk with other people about it, feel free to go to some other discussion groups and some of the links.
Tweet at me, Andrew, or email me.
But we got to get going with this call. So thanks again for your time. But I'm going to use my power as an unelected official to terminate this call. But my rights were given by God, so you know you're going to have to deal with it. So anyway, MD, what did you think of that call?
I think it took a long time to get to something, get down to brass tacks, we'll say.
I think so too. I think there's obviously problems with saying that states' rights are the best, because they're not. I think we talked about that. And we also both agree that how we define personhood, how we define what happens in a pregnancy, and when we can get to the point of personhood and giving that thing rights, it's complicated, but it's not completely arbitrary. Like, yes, there are things you have to consider that are going to vary from individual to individual. There are subjective points of reason, but there are some things that aren't. There are some things that just aren't. And we can look at that and still formulate how we can come to a consensus on what we believe to be right, what we believe to be wrong. It's not completely arbitrary.
And I mean, if I can defer or disagree with you to a certain extent, maybe it's just a language thing, but you were saying, I think people with uteruses should have rights. And I'm saying, I think they do have rights and that certain states are choosing to not recognize those rights.
Right. I think they should. Well, yeah. When I say it, they should have rights recognized by the state, you know, and they don't. That's what it is. But hey, we want to give a quick shout out to the top five patrons for the Patreon for Talk Heathen. We want to, of course, thank everybody that donates on the Patreon for Talk Heathen, but we also want to give a special shout out to the top five. So we're going to do that right now. Number one is Eric Tweet. Number two is Dingleberry Jackson. Number 3 is Balaam's donkey. Number 4 is Ayami. Number 5 is Dan Conver. And honorable mention goes to Mike McViles. So thank you to everybody that donates on the Talk Ethan Patreon. You guys rock, and you help make shows like this one continue to happen. We still have a lot of people who want to talk to us, and we are taking our time, but let's see if we can at least get to one more call, maybe another after that. I don't know. We will see. You've got Colin Studio open. Do you want to pick one? What do you think?
I like Laura. I'm happy with that one.
Okay. Let's talk happy. I think I'm happy with that one. Let's talk with Laura, who's calling in from England. Laura, you are live on Talk Heathen. What's up?
Oh, hi, Dan and MG. I've seen you on the Truth Wanted and Objectively Dan on here. I think you're both awesome, and you've handled the calls really well. Like, my universe. That's been quite a show. Yeah, so being a woman myself, and I know I'm not in the UK, USA, I'm from England, and we have great abortion rights, and I just feel like my heart goes out to every woman in the USA right now, because it's a very sad day for your country, and I feel so bad for them. But what it is I have a mild form of mental illness called bipolar type 2, where it means your extremes of moods are a little bit higher or lower than normal. And when I was 17, I got pregnant, and I got to, I think I was about 7 weeks. So it was early, and I am thankful that it was early. And I made the choice to have an abortion, because I think people with mental illness, if they're struggling to look after themselves in the world, how the hell can they be expected to look after a child? And it's not fair. And what about the people in your country with mental illness that wouldn't be able to raise a child due to their health or any other reason? They should have the right. And I just feel terribly sorry for the state of your laws in your country. If there was a way for the USA and UK governments to get together and you could come over here and have an abortion, that would be great. Mm-hmm. We could do something like that. But it's just it's so unfair. And I'm really lucky that being in my country in England, that I had the choice to be able to end my pregnancy due to mental illness, that I couldn't take care of a child. And I think men getting involved with men making these decisions for women is terrible. And I'd like your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I'll just start by saying, empires rise and fall, right? Like, we often think that the rights that we have are a given, but the truth is they're not. The truth is that they are fought for, and they have to be fought for every day to ensure that we continue to have these rights, because they can be taken away. And we've already, of course, seen this happen this week, and we may see it happen for other rights, such as the rights for same-sex marriage, the rights for access to contraception, and other rights as well that seem to be on the table, on the chopping block, so it seems. With that in mind, it just means that we have to continue to talk about these issues, continue raising hell about it until we can make that change. I mean, the American tradition is based on raising hell, right? It's based on complaining and being a Karen and saying, hey, we actually don't want this to be the way that we live our lives. For better or worse, that's how Americans have gotten stuff done, and that's how a lot of rights have been fought for in this country. So I expect that this will continue to be the tradition as we move along here and see what happens next. But unfortunately, right now, it doesn't seem that there's a clear pathway to guarantee the rights of every American citizen across the country. Yeah.
You know, if there is an exception in your law about people with mental illness, and if their rights are different from ending their pregnancy.
There's the only ones I'm aware of, at least for like Texas, is medical complications that happen during birthing process, but there's no exceptions for rape, there's no exceptions for incest, there's no exceptions for all these things. And Yeah, and I believe that's the case for most other states as well that currently have these restrictions on abortions.
Oh, that's horrible. I feel so bad for women in the USA.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, I think the thing that you're probably... So thank you for sharing, first of all. And you're kind of preaching to the choir a little bit with your stance, which we always appreciate. But I think the closest thing to what you're talking about is the... capability of a person to make decisions and understand the consequences of those decisions. So we usually call that in the medical field consent and capacity, which means that, you know, we don't really base it on whether you have a diagnosis of a mental illness. You know, someone can have the capacity to make a decision about their care, about, like, for instance, whether or not to have an abortion, whether or not they have a mental illness or any other kind of illness, right? You could make a good argument that some... Yeah, you could make the argument that some people who are capable of becoming pregnant are perhaps not capable of understanding the consequences of that pregnancy and therefore may not have the, you know, we may not seek their consent for any procedure, whether it's abortion or otherwise. But it really doesn't, like, to me as a healthcare practitioner, it doesn't have anything to do with any particular diagnosis someone has. It has to do with whether or not they can foresee the consequences of the decisions they make and understand them. So I think I get where you're coming from, but I feel a little bit iffy about any blanket statement that says if you have a mental illness diagnosis, then
I completely understand. You know, it should be whether any woman who's just feels that they, whether they're mentally ill or not, that they feel that they couldn't raise the child themselves. It should be that they should have that right.
Yeah. And I totally, the other thing that I want to say is I totally hear where you're coming from. We shouldn't allow men to be making these decisions. And I think in a lot of cases, that's what's happening. But I also think there's a lot of women who are making these decisions for other women as well and are in the pro-life movement, we'll say, or the forced birth movement. So it's not just men, although it's predominantly men, I think, in the States.
Nobody except the individual should have the right to be making choices for anybody else's business. It's not their business.
Some of which are women who have had abortions before and don't believe that other other people should have them, which is probably the most frustrating out of it. But they have retroactively decided that, oh, what they did was actually bad and that nobody else should be able to do it. And of course, the richest in our society, the people with the most access to resources, you know, they're still going to be able to fly to another state and probably make those things, those connections happen and make it make it happen. The people who are going to be affected the most by this are the people with the least amount of resources. The people the poorest in our country, and that's always statistically been true. Even now, at even I shouldn't say now because it's not anymore, but even when abortion was illegal or was legal across this country, it still affected the most poor in this country as far as access. And so now that's going to be just multiplied. So it's quite a terrible situation. It's quite a terrible situation. But we really appreciate you calling in and giving your support.
Thank you so much. And you've handled all the calls amazingly. And I watched a lot of the ACA Truth Wanted and Objections with Dan. You're doing great. And thank you for everything. And take care.
Thank you, Laura. We really appreciate you calling in. And we wouldn't be able to do these shows if it weren't for viewers like yourself who support us. So thank you for your support as well. You had somebody you want to say there, MD? Or
No.
Okay.
I just want to say thank you to Laura. It's good to hear from women on this issue. I don't think we've had a female caller on this issue this episode.
No, which is weird. And it's also funny, of course, that we're two dudes talking about this as well. But it's just what we were on the schedule for. And of course, you have a lot of expertise in this particular issue as well. I'd say more so than a lot of the hosts. So there you go.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm not an OB-GYN, but I have done, I have some experience.
Yeah, which is great. We're going to try to take, I think, one more call before the end of the show. But real quick, before we do, I just want to talk about the newest episode of the ACA show, The Nonprofits, which is going to air live at 3 p.m. Central right after today's show. It's going to be at tiny.cc/YTNP. So check out that if you haven't already. And the ACA wants you to know what is going on in our community. And for that, we've got an updated website. So head to www.atheist-community.org, where you can learn about the organization itself, its policies, and how you can get involved. I feel so, I shouldn't say www anymore. Like that's so like early 2000s. I don't know why I did that, but I did. And then we also want to hear from you as well. We want to know what you liked, what you thought was effective, and more importantly, what you thought that we could do better. So you can email us. It's tv@atheist-community.org and let us know if you want to talk about how MD Aware is like the coolest dude ever, or if you think he sucks. I mean, I don't know if I want to hear that. Maybe he does. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a glutton for punishment.
He's a glutton for punishment. So he has, he's just explicitly given permission on air for you to say that and, you know, insult him. No, not really. But please, if you do give us your feedback, again, link for that is tv@atheist-community.org. And let us know. And let's try to take, I think, one more call before we wrap up today's show. Let's see. Let's talk to, you want to talk to Tio from Croatia? Okay. I think it's Tio. Please correct us if it's wrong, but Tio from Croatia. I haven't talked to anybody from Croatia before. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. You're live on Talk Heathen.
Okay. I want to talk about if Christianity is a hoax if you're a heathen, or if heathen is an invalid religion if you're a Christian.
Well, I don't think Christianity... It's a little hard to hear to you. If you're on speakerphone, I'd recommend you not do that. Is Christianity a hoax? I mean, depending on how you define it, yes. I don't believe it's central claims or...
It says that it's a hoax because it takes you down some other road that doesn't matter if you're a heathen.
Yeah, well, when I'm talking about it being a hoax here, I'm saying, like, are its central claims true? Are they demonstrable in any sense? And I would say no. I would say most of Christianity's claims are not true, and therefore I don't recognize Christianity to be true as a result, right? Like that's the simple way to put it.
But could you just say that it's a different path and it works, but not for you, and you would just say that
no,
another way of saying things.
I don't think I can say that for very clear reasons, because I think it makes explicit claims about reality that can be demonstrably shown to not be true, and I don't think. Personally, that I want to live in a world where people can just kind of pick the paths they want to believe about reality and go with it from there. Like, obviously, there's some flexibility in that. I got to let people live their lives. But for some cases, it's going to decide policies, international policies sometimes, and national policies of countries and what people have rights to have, and what rights not to have. For example, the rights to, have abortions. Is one of them. So yeah, it whatever other people believe doesn't just affect themselves. It affects everybody. So I can't let everybody just kind of live and let live. Not all the time, anyways. Obviously, yeah. For some cases, you just kind of have to. But for cases of national importance, I do choose to speak out. I do choose to point out that they are wrong.
Okay, but then I think it's a religious conflict. Because you can't have both at the same time on universities and things like that. There would be many debates that are most likely more of a conflict than a debate about how you could choose either path. Because both sides claim that you can't just choose it. It has, okay, he doesn't say it has to choose you. Otherwise, you just have to not worship the devil.
Well, maybe, but that depends. That depends to you on your specific idea of Christianity and your religion. I mean, like there are lots of, Catholicism, for example, like has contributed to the sciences. They've been against science a lot in the past, but they have contributed as far as resources and other things to scientific understanding, right? Like that church as an institution has been a part of that history, whether we like it or not, right? There's a lot of religious people who are fine with current understandings of science, for example, on particular issues. There's a lot of people who have a current understanding of similar rights. They want gay people to have the right to get married. They want women and people with uteruses to have the rights to get abortion. I mean, like these things don't always have to be in conflict with each other. It really is kind of circumstantial there.
Yes, but then you have to separate them.
Who? I mean, what do you mean?
Between the two, it's always both sides are saying that the other side is invalid.
Yeah?
Yeah. So the key is figuring out how you're going to measure, the key is figuring out how you're going to measure who is right. What's your basis for making that determination? And that's what we always try to talk about. It's not about what you believe, it's about why you believe it.
If you do it based on personal knowledge, knowledge, then you're probably a heathen. But if you do it with the backup of religious dogmas, then you're most likely a Christian. But it doesn't have to be like that, because you could prove that a Christian is invalid in some case.
Right. And like lots of other religions use what you'd call religious dogma as well to justify them. So that's obvious. So religious dogma is obviously not a good justification to believe anything.
Yes. But it just means that heathen is now underground, and it can get to a point where it's being taught academically, because the Christians wouldn't recognize it. You'd have to push it somewhere. You'd have to have heathen scientists and academics, but there are very few. So can
what, there's very few heathen scientists?
Universities.
I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, you're saying there's not. Go ahead.
If you think it's possible that in the future you could have heathenry on the same level as Christianity in schools, in public education, and things like that, do you think that's going to happen someday?
Heathen, do you mean secular?
Well, the same way that Christianity is being taught in the educational system.
Right. Well, okay. So, like in the United States, for example, like we have a secular public school system. Like the Christianity is not taught as a truth within our public schools. At least it shouldn't be, according to our constitution. But like there's lots of places that have secular school systems.
Yeah, but in the academic field, you can study Christianity. You can get a degree in being a Christian theologist, but you can do that.
Yes.
Yeah, sure, I see but that. Studying like say secularism as an ism, would I'm sure that people have PhDs in that already, right? Sure that it's already discussed, but it just doesn't have any lore necessarily associated with it, right? There's no like ancient text that people have to comb through. It would be more of like a cultural social sciences type degree than like a traditional religious studies degree.
Yes, it's more about it's you're a researcher and you're going to write an article about it. It doesn't mean that you're a heathen.
Correct. Yes. So you can study something without believing the thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm an atheist. I can write a paper about Christians without being a Christian and believing in any of the things that I talk about.
The heathen is not represented anywhere. It's not represented anywhere except on the internet and maybe in the studio and things like that. There's no official way of representing it.
Because it's not really a thing, right? Like there's no like church of atheism, really. You could say the same thing about any negative belief, right? Like the classic thing is like not stamp collecting. It's like, oh, there's no non-stamp collecting clubs around. There's stamp collecting clubs and there's mahjong clubs and there's curling clubs and there's all these other types of like social groups. But there's no non-stamp collecting or non-golfing or non-curling clubs. It's like, well, obviously, because it's like a negative thing. We like secular people just find other stuff to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
So then it is, in my opinion, impossible that heathenry makes a big breakthrough and comes back. I don't think it's going to happen. Maybe in like 300 years it gets some attention, but not much. I don't think it's going to be the same as it was with Christianity when it just spread around very fast and things like that.
Maybe, but I do think that there's scholars that are talking about right now the effects of secularism on our culture, right? Like there are people talking about like what that means for us culturally, because that is a big deal. The fact that we are going from a society that views Christianity in less of importance in people's lives, even people who nominally have Christian beliefs, the baggage that comes with that isn't nearly as big as it was even just 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So like I think, you know, people are still talking about this, but obviously they're not going to talk about it in the same way, right? Like secular culture is quite different from Christian culture, right? Christian culture, you have very particular through lines you can look at, whereas, you know, the culture of secularism is the separation. It is the act of leaving the religious thinking behind. So it's obviously quite a different thing to talk about, but I don't know. I don't live in the future.
In the secular culture, you should most likely acknowledge both as a religion, unless you want to represent one or the other for a debate.
Yeah, I don't know about religion. Definitely ideology. Sure. I mean, like definitely process of thinking, right? Like underlying systems of thought are important when we're talking about what drives a culture, right? Because and just like Christianity, there'll be differences in what secular cultures value and what they consider to be as important. And so, yeah, I mean, that's important to study, but I don't really know what much else to say, man. I think that's really all we can say.
Do you think that heathenry is not represented because it's a taboo, or do you think it's because it just doesn't really work that well compared to other religions that spread much more rapidly?
I think it's both. I mean, there was literally like a church of atheism, like in France, right? Like there has been trying to make these groups that have tried to define themselves off of this one thing. But the problem is like there's not a lot to unify on. Like Christianity, there's several tenets and several layers to that belief and what that means and how that affects your daily life. When it comes to secularism, again, it is a tree of different ideas and different philosophies and thoughts you can go to. You take 10 secular people, they're going to have 10 different ideologies on how they think the world should be run and what kinds of philosophical underpinnings are left to their beliefs. So there's not really a thing to unite on other than the fact that they're not religious in a traditional sense. So, you know, what do you do with that? Not much to do there. But Tio, I think we need to start wrapping up today's episode of Talk Heathen. So thanks so much for calling in from Croatia, quite a bit of a ways away. And with that out of the way, I think we need to start wrapping up today's show. You know, I would say, hey, MG, where can people find you at? But, you know, they should know. They should know where
they should.
You, right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I live at Truth Wanted most of the time.
Yeah.
On Fridays. You can tweet at me at EMDEE aware. And you can email me through the tv@atheist-community.org.
Yes. So
if you want to continue any of these discussions, just shoot me a tweet or a DM or whatever.
Right. And if you like me, you can follow me on Twitter at Objectively Dan. And of course, I am host here on Talk Heathen and also host on Truth Wanted as well. So you should check that out. And CMD on there too. Before we go out, I want to talk to you guys about a couple different ways, again, to support the show. One of them being that our chat has a fundraiser. 100% of the proceeds of that are going to go directly to the ACA. YouTube does not take any of that. Please like and subscribe to the channel. We would love that from you. And we'd also love it if you click the join button below the video as well to become a member. Get access to all the cool, fun, extra features that come with that. I think they're pretty neat. Please consider supporting us on patreon.com. That's tiny.cc/patreonth. And maybe if you become a top patron, we'll give you a shout out too. We also now have a channel, again, that hosts all of the shows in the ACA library in audio podcast form. The link to that is tiny.cc/AEN podcasts. You can become part of the Talk Heathen community again on our Facebook groups, and that's going to be discussion group there. It's a fan-run Facebook page, so check that out as well. Links to that in the description, but it's tiny.cc/FBTHG. And if you'd like to continue the discussion in other places, please consider joining us live for that next time. We'd love to see what you guys have to say. And also, please participate in the comments section too. We want to hear from you there. And after this show, we're going to premiere the new nonprofits episode, the flagship show of the Atheist Community of Austin. So please check that out if you can. Now, I need to give a special thanks to the crew that helps make this show happen every single week. Let's go to that crew cam and show off who's running this show. All the people and cats that help make this show happen. Thank you, everybody, for doing that. And we want to thank you guys out there as well. Whether or not you believe, if you are an essential worker, we want to thank you. And if you don't believe, this is your community. And if you do believe, we don't hate you.
We're just not convinced.
That's right. Bye, everybody. Thanks so much for watching this episode of Talk Heathen. Here's some love rings for you. Throwing those out there. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye, everybody.
We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Friday at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTW and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTW.